Liron Hirschhorn here, your host of the E-commerce Mindset Podcast. And in this episode, we talk about all the ups and downs of scaling businesses. We shared a little bit about Thrasio, which you may remember was the fastest profitable unicorn in history. They, following that, went through restructuring, layoffs, despite raising $3.4 billion and acquiring over 260 companies. The lesson: growing rapidly is hard, but dedicated and committed founders can overcome the challenges. And Yoni Kuzminski from Southcall and Multiply Me and Escala, we had a conversation about how they help businesses to identify areas of improvement, such as brand expansion, diversification, how they empower founders and have their due diligence process for which companies they choose to invest in. So if you're looking to scale your business, you'll want to listen to this episode. The episode, as always, is sponsored by Incrementum Digital. We help brands scale and grow on Amazon. You can check out incrementumdigital.com as well as 8fig.com, which helps brands with growth capital and supply chain planning tools. So enjoy this episode with Yoni Kuzminski. Check out the show notes and let me know how you felt about this episode. We'd love to hear your feedback. Enjoy the episode with Yoni. Exactly. All right. On that note, let's hit record. I have Yoni Kuzminski with me, one of the co-founders of Southco and Multiply Me. If I have that correct.
Southco, yeah.
Southco. Well, tell us what it stands for, because I know there's a story behind it.
Firstly, I'd love to. And Liron, thanks for hosting me today. It's nice to sit in this seat. I know I've had you on Successful Scales. Nice to come back and sit together again. And I guess, like any founder of any business, particularly in the e-commerce space, there's a story behind it. And right. Southcoal is the last base camp before you summit Everest. And so the whole logic and idea behind the business is that there's a lot of incredible e-commerce founders that exist, and there are levels to this game. Our objective is to help founders summit their ultimate peak, and not to use the cliches from 2021 and 2022 of don't leave money on the table, but really the idea is that for making big decisions and for taking your business to market, it's not about that last 90 days where you put lipstick on a pig and you get the numbers right and you take it to market. It's about how do you actually grow this thing to its absolute value. And that's what we're trying to do with Southcall.
Yeah. So let's take a step back for a second. For those that don't know your story, you started a brand on Amazon and scaled it. Maybe take us back to what year was that in and what was your experience like in terms of going through the same process?
Yeah. So my experience, I've been in digital marketing virtually my entire career in creative advertising. So I spent about a decade in agency land growing agencies. So I used to do strategy for Sony, MasterCard, Mercedes-Benz, Medtronic, everything from web development and design to TV commercials and video production work and photo shoots. And I was in Australia, launched Mercedes-Benz Australia, New Zealand's Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and Pinterest, sitting with Mercedes-Benz legal team, trying to help them understand why it's okay to be on Facebook. So way back when, and lived in LA and was doing it, I would say, on the biggest stage with companies like Snapchat, it was back then, but Snap now, and Sony, et cetera. So that was my sort of background. Media buying, content production, everything that goes into D2C and e-commerce. And I probably built my first e-commerce brand, or rather e-commerce website for a brand, back in 2010. So it's definitely been all the way through my career. And I had my first, I would say, like meaningful taste of the Amazon drug in 2016 or 17, when I got to Israel and met a couple of guys that had an Amazon business that was doing about 2 million in revenue and had gotten a bit stuck, and came in there and was able to, in about 12 months, scale that from 2 to 5 million by building out a high functioning agency for that business out of the Philippines that ultimately was acquired by Thrasio, and rolled that experience into Multiply Me, which is our staffing business where we find talent in the Philippines and emulate a lot of what we did for that business for a lot of e-commerce agencies, businesses, aggregators. We place probably 700 odd people now over the last 3.5 years into other businesses, and rolled that then into Escala, which is a process improvement consultancy where we effectively go into businesses with our boutique consultancy of about 35 management consultants and interview, shadow, review, understand the operation and design the accountability chart and org chart and build all the SOPs, training videos, documentation, and streamline that process and just help businesses get ready for scale. That's been a really big lever for us in growing from a team of 4 to 120 in a couple of years. We wouldn't have been able to do that without those kinds of resources. So I've taken you all the way back, Liran, because Southcole makes a lot more sense when you hear of what were the pieces along the way. And Southcole is the latest evolution where it's a joint venture now between ourselves, Sellersfy, and GW Partners, Global Wide Advisors, formerly, where we're effectively coming together and we're saying, how do we really help brands, owners get out of their own way effectively and focus on the things that are really going to have the most impact on their business, both from a sanity check, like how do they actually spend time on the things that they're most passionate about? I know through the journey in Escala, you speak to so many people and they love the product development side of things. They love brand building and coming up with the creative ideas, but they end up getting stuck in things like, you know, filing cases with Amazon support and customer support and things that stranded inventory, et cetera. So really it was born on the back of that.
If you don't get away from doing those things, you'll never be able to scale your business, right? If you're in the weeds of cases, how can you be focused on product development, et cetera? And I think something that a lot of founders are not doing enough of is just spending time outside the business, like thinking, right? And I think sometimes your best ideas will not be while you're writing an email, right? It's going to be when you're away from your computer, like taking a hike somewhere or whatever it is, where you develop and think about ideas. And so one of your goals is to help the founders get out of, I guess, the weeds and focus on what they really enjoy doing probably and where they can make the most impact in the business.
Yeah, absolutely. That's legitimately the early stage value proposition is when we're coming in as Southcole, we're interviewing the founder and the key people and we're understanding where are you spending your time and what are the things that are actually growing your multiple? What are the things that are actually impacting your bottom line? And just to give you an example use case, like when we're working with businesses, the very first thing that we might do is assess like, how are they spending their time? And let's say that they're pretty good at their PPC management and they're pretty good at their listing creation and optimization. But the reality is we all know how important it is. You literally have an entire agency that is focused on that plus a lot of other value add offerings. But what we actually look to do is say, founder, you should be working on things like brand expansion. Let's think of the next 30 products that you want to bring to market. Let's help you build a system that allows you to do that. Or let's actually evolve the brand and the way in which it is perceived in market. One of the examples of one of our portfolio investments to date was that an entire world and ecosystem has been built out of these juvenile girls' toys where there's now a whole land where all the characters are. We've synced the founder up with a product development specialist that's helping build out this brand and this whole ecosystem that makes it a whole lot more attractive. And that wouldn't be possible if we weren't looking to identify agencies like Incrementum. And it's probably maybe not for right now on the podcast, but it's worth having a conversation because one of the levers we're trying to pull here is that with the injection of capital comes the ability to invest it in smarter ways. And so finding really high value resources like you guys and saying, help us handle the PPC, help us focus on the listing creation, optimization, all the stuff that needs to be done that we need to grow that top line and also that those efficiencies, you guys can focus on that while we can focus on the things that are expansion into the EU and Canada if they're not there, or having diversification and having 15% of total revenue coming from, say, Shopify if they're not really invested in their D2C brand. Just a few examples off the top of my head.
Right. And were there learnings from your own exit that you can look back, that one you're bringing to this, but also like in looking back, do you think you made the right moves in relation to your exit? Like as far as the time, the selling at the right time, and maybe are there things you could have done better, you think, or differently in terms of your exit? Or do you think pretty much it was a great process and outcome for you?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, it was an interesting experience. I didn't found the company. I was later stage into it. It had already had 2 years in. It was a super dysfunctional relationship the two original founders had, and that was pretty toxic.
Acquire it, or did you come in as an investor, like third founder or third owner or whatever?
I came in with investing equity into the business, and it was a super messy process. That's the truth of it. I ended up walking before the entire thing got fully done. And that was mostly because the relationships that I had. I think one of the biggest learnings that I had from that experience is you have to pick your partners, and you have to be very sure of their moral compass and what's important to them. And I'm talking to you as someone now who not only has a co-founder in Lippy, who I love to death, and I think we make an amazing team. We've brought on another partner into the business who's bought into it earlier this year. So I'm like a huge believer in partners, and that hasn't tainted my experience. It's just made me very careful on what are the critical things that they need to look like. Now, coming back to that experience and where that business was at, and so the exit experience around it, I would say that for that business and the level of, or lack thereof, sophistication in it, and the time in, we're talking 2017, 2018, is a very different time. I actually came into that business saying, I'm going to turn this into a D2C monster. That was what I knew. I knew how to buy media. I knew how to build real traffic. I understood what it was to build a brand. I'd been doing that my whole life. And I'll never forget. It was probably a week into sort of exploring working together. I built my own little boutique agency and was debating whether I walk away from that. And I was like, listen, something's not right here. And he's, what do you mean? I'm like, I'm seeing 25% conversion rates on like all of the traffic that's coming through paid. He's like, yeah, it's a little down at the moment. I said, you know what? Forget everything I've said about D2C. We're doubling down on Amazon. It's going to take me years to get to these sorts of numbers and the level of investment. Coming back to it, I think it was the right decision, definitely, for those founders and to exit the business at that time. And it was at the earlier stage of the exiting wave. That business would not get sold today. No way. My firm belief, like I don't see enough differentiation. I also just see a lot of red flags in today's market on what that brand was and is. And yeah, it was the right time.
Right. There were probably, I think there's many businesses that sold in 2020 and 2021 that probably could not sell today, just based off where the buyers are in terms of revenues and EBITDA, and also the business itself, products. I imagine where sales are today compared to where they were during
the frenzy.
Yeah, the frenzy. And relating to partners, I have a partner in Incrementum, and yeah, it's an amazing relationship. And I would say 1000%, it's one of those things where 1 + 1 = 7 and not 2, when you have really great complementary type of skill sets, and you don't want to work on the things they work on. They don't want to do the things you do. That's an amazing, amazing marriage. And it is a lot like a marriage. And I also had a pretty bad experience with a partner early in 2020. And I had to, thankfully, I was able to end that relationship with a lot of stress and panic, and advice from other people, lawyers, other people that were able to kind of help me stay sane during the time. But again, I wouldn't say partnerships are bad, but I think there's learnings for that for me are that there you should try to date before you get married in a lot of ways. And also if you don't know each other that well, you should have some sort of provisions in your agreement that of what happens if, like a prenup, right?
Yeah.
That they would have in a marriage, you should put in place in the business. At the end of the day, I think each of those experiences makes you better, hopefully in business. And like I made some decisions out of naivety, I think, like in 2019, to make that partnership happen, that I definitely learned a lot from. Sounds like you had some good learnings from that relationship. And when you look back, if it wasn't for that, it wouldn't be for the learnings there and probably the things you went to do next.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly. It's those experiences, particularly those tough experiences you were saying, like having to speak to legal and going through that process. I did the same things. I was trying to understand, like, what am I walking away from? What do I get when the transaction happens? And I had to go through, I had to do a lot of soul searching and saying, do I want to go through this really ugly process? Like, I'll own minority stake in this business. Do I want to go through this really ugly process for the next year dealing with someone who is just not a good human for a material payday?
But
or do I want to cut my losses? Say I've learned some things. I've seen an opportunity here and launch into what my new reality is. And so I'm not even 4 years on from that moment. Right. September will be 4 years on, and I'm running three businesses. I've got incredible partners. We've got an incredible team. And while sure, do I have the dollars in my pocket that I would have had then right now? No, I don't, but I'm far happier. I see the bigger picture and the vision, and I'm doing it with people that I love. It's all about what you take from those experiences.
That's definitely a lot of smart people in business have told me life is short. It's too short to work with people you don't like working with and to suffer and sell your soul for and deal with the stress and everything else for some short-term gains. So tell me about the model with South Coal.
Yeah.
How does it work? So you have three companies involved. You have Escala, which is the management consulting side. You have Sellersfy, which is funding. And then you have Global Wired, which is M&A. So you're bringing in kind of the components to help scale. So let's say I'm a founder. I have, maybe I have a small team, a few people on the team, and I'm doing a lot of work in the business. How active of a role are you playing in, like, day to day versus more kind of consulting? And I guess in what cases is funding always part of the equation or not necessarily?
Yeah, great. Firstly, great questions. The right questions and the questions that I would say every founder who's exploring this should be should be top of mind. So first instance, like our process one, to be candid again, it's not going to be right for everyone, both on our side and on their side. And just to give you the high level, like if you're someone who has every answer, everything figured out, and you've got it all figured out, you just need your hands on the right capital and leave me alone. I don't want to hear anything. Just give me the money and off I go. Probably not the right relationship for us. Like we're looking for people who are highly motivated, are open for feedback. And while, you know, we're minority investing here. So you own the majority of the company. You are the ultimate decision maker. You are driving firmly in the driver's seat. We're just here as guiding rails throughout this 2-year journey, effectively. You definitely want to find partners who have been there, done that, and can help you through this journey. I'd say that is a starting point. And when I talk about the process that we go through like any business that's going to actually put money to work and get involved, we go through a diligence process where we're really looking at that criteria. We go through, I'd say like a lot of people who listen to your podcast, I'm sure are very familiar with what the aggregator process or any acquirer really for that.
Yeah, we buy, build, and sell, and it's under 30 days. Come on,
yeah, exactly.
Everyone knows them all.
Exactly right, yeah. Couldn't have quoted that better myself. So the difference with us and the key difference, the question that I get asked often, and we're a relatively new entity is South Coal. We're not even 12 months in market. But we're not an aggregator. So we're not trying to buy this business off you. What we're trying to do is support you through this journey and empower the founder. And so one of the things that an aggregator wouldn't do is go through what we call like founder diligence. For us, it's how motivated is the founder to really squeeze every bit of juice out of the business to get it to where it needs to go. The way we look at the equation is, the first 90 days that we're in, let's say we get past the whole diligence process, we love you, you love us, it's a match made in heaven here. Then ultimately the first 90 days we're spending on our accelerate phase, where what we're trying to understand is how is the founder spending their time in the business? What are the opportunities across things like product, brand, marketing, operational and business management? What are the things that we can actually look to improve? And we work backwards in this 24-month roadmap in 3-month increments of all the things across those different areas that we're going to look to achieve. And we start committing to these goals. And ultimately, we're documenting the processes. We're understanding what it actually looks like, how we can create these efficiencies, who are the right partners to bring on in the capacity that the founder and the team needs to have a high degree of support. And then we'll actually sit with them every single week. Nick, the CEO and former CFO and early stage funder of Sellers Funding or Sellers Finow, he has a great line. He says, look, we've got 80 weeks that we sit together for 30 minutes. And in that time, we've got to move it at least 1%. If we don't make any material change in that 1 week, then we've lost something material. And so we break it down into really small chunks. So you'll sit with one of the founding team members. There's 5 of us for a 30-minute call each week where it's a check-in and we see how we're doing and where we're at and if there's any challenges. And you'll also sit with 2 of our management consultants every single week where I would say, like, for founders looking at it, look at it as an accountability partner. Once we build the roadmap, they're checking in and making sure you have every degree of support that you need and holding you accountable to saying, hey, you know, what are the other resources you need? What are the things that are holding you back? What are your constraints? And then we'll come and see what we can bring to the table. So I would say it's from this type of business model, it's very hands-on, but it's not overbearing in the sense that I would say for me as a founder, we're bootstrapped. My biggest concern, and this is like the example I give, is that if someone were to have funded us when we were just Multiply Me, there's no way in hell anyone who had a 20, 30, 40% stake in that business would have let me try and build this other business at Scala, because they would have said, you're losing focus. But what's happened here is that it's been the most valuable piece of the chain that we've built and has led us to South Cole. And so we're not trying to be that kind of investor that doesn't let you try things. On the contrary, we're actually trying to push you to move into D2C, for example, if you're not there, and build you those supports and resources and say, because you're diversified and because 15% of your total revenue now sits in another channel outside of Amazon, your business is more valuable today. So let's help you get there. And that's really it is. You'll make the call. If that doesn't sound like the right move for you, maybe there's another channel. Maybe it makes more sense just to expand into the EU if you're not there, for example. Maybe Etsy makes more sense depending on the category. Right. Obviously, it's a bespoke solution for every single business, and it'll depend on where they sit and where they're at and what they're trying to achieve and where we're trying to take it. But ultimately, I'd say that's a long-winded answer of saying that's how our process works, and that's the level of touch points that we have.
And do you think you have like around, I don't know, a handful of companies that are currently like in the working with you, which is pretty impressive for less than 12 months in and having all the due diligence that you're doing. Do you think there will be some opportunities to take 2 brands in the same niche and roll them up? Is that part of the ultimate plan, or maybe even 5 unrelated brands that you're bringing in at the same cohort, so to speak, and have that advantage for those founders to get a higher multiple being like an aggregator, but not an aggregator in a sense?
Yeah, I would say like going in, that's not our driving goal and intention. You could definitely make the argument where there might be an instance where it does make sense. I would say former of the 2, if there were 2 that were in a similar niche and made sense, then obviously we'd have the capabilities. We work with a lot of aggregators to document the processes of a company that they're looking to acquire and then help integrate it into their sort of mothership business. So we're pretty well versed in doing that stuff. But at the moment, it's really just looking at brands that sort of fit our investment criteria, looking to invest $1 million to $5 million into those businesses and really help accelerate their growth.
And so is the investment a cash buy-in of equity, or is it coming from the funding side?
It's coming.
You're getting equity for the work, for the sort of consulting piece, and I'm sure some discounted brokerage or maybe no brokerage or whatever it is, right? Like in terms of fees.
Yeah. So your assumptions are right. So essentially what we're able to do is we're getting them through the facility much better terms. So it's, to be direct here, interest-only terms for the entire duration of the investment period. So the goal really is the founder doesn't feel any of this because it's interest only. And once the business exits, then principal is paid back. And what's more is how we actually approach it is we value the company. Let's say I'm terrible at math, so I like to use very simple numbers, but let's just say it's $1 million EBITDA. It's
dangerous to do public math.
Yes. Yeah. Especially for someone like me. I'm sure like if they cut my head open, they would see that I just can't hold numbers in my head and it's not my wheelhouse. But ultimately, keeping it real simple here, let's say it's $1 million EBITDA, $5 million revenue business, right? What we do is we'd say, great, let's give it a fair market value today. We all know that it's a tough market. Not a lot of deals are getting done, particularly at that size, but let's just say a 3 multiple, right? Be relatively generous about what that valuation is. What we would do is we would look to help grow that business from 1 to 2 million in EBITDA, 5 to 10 million in revenue. Again, really simple numbers here. Hopefully we get it to 2.5 or 3, but let's keep it simple because I'm not going to play that dangerous game here. And then when we get it to that size, then we're looking maybe at a 4.5, a 5, a 5.5 multiple on that 2 million EBITDA business. And all of a sudden, so let's use the 5, it's a $10 million business minus the principal, and we're taking a minority stake on the upside. So not on the, so they own everything up until that $3 million. And then we're taking a minority stake on everything above that minus the repayment of the principal. And so that's how we're operating. And like you said, it's the investment of time. So you're not paying for what the consultants are doing throughout the entire 2-year period. You're not paying for our time. You're not paying a brokerage fee from the investment bank and what their upside would be. So when you bring all those pieces together, you'll see that we've not only increased the value of the company, but ultimately what you would probably end up paying for the collective services and even just getting access to that amount of capital in that type of funding for businesses that are this small is relatively unheard of. That's how the model is built. And really what we're saying here as well is we're putting our money where our mouth is. And one of the things that I love so much about this model is the fact that if we don't have a material impact and we don't sell above the threshold, then all the work that we've put in for the 2 years goes to nothing. So there's that aspect as well. Which is why you need to do
your own due diligence to assess the level of risk you're taking in working with the brand.
That's why we don't have hundreds of brands in the portfolio today. Yeah. We've looked at a lot of companies, and for one way or another, it hasn't been a fit. And so we're, again, like any early stage business, you've got to be selective. We're not at a point where we can. And I would say, like, in general, one of the things that, not to totally change topics here, but one of the things that typically frustrates me about the venture capital model is that you've got these incredible founders that are motivated, trying to change the world, and we're all passionate about what we're doing. And so it's, let's just throw a bunch of money at this problem. Let's see how they go. And 8 out of 10 of them are going to fail, but the 1 or 2 will succeed, and that'll hedge the entire bet. And I hate that for the sheer reason that you're probably going to burn a lot of incredible founders that way, where they lose that degree of confidence because it didn't go to plan. And all of a sudden you've lost what that means to a future potential person's capabilities. And so I think with this being selective and really focused on like backing winners who we know the founder is built for it. We know that it's a 2-year period at the longer end of it, or 2.5-year period at the longer end of it. Very clear in what's expected, and this isn't a marriage forever. We've got a very clear roadmap together.
And you would think if the aggregators had the same model in terms of their due diligence, they would have been a lot more selective. But in a sense, the aggregators had so much money thrown at them that they were just buying stuff without, I think, that level of, if they only made money, if they didn't think about, oh, we have this like just roll up arbitrage where it's immediately worth more once we buy it, which in hindsight, probably not happening, but was the thought, then they would have been a lot more selective if they only made money if in this period of time they could actually increase the EBITDA, et cetera. They would have been a lot more selective. So sometimes it is very powerful to be bootstrapped because it forces you to act a lot more responsibly. And then, in terms of the founders and My theory is that you have to go through some major challenge that you need to overcome before you are able to really achieve what your potential is for achieving. Similar to the story you had, right, with those two founders or whatever, just like a challenging thing. And I think some people will have some sense of more luck work in their favor, where maybe they don't have that on their first startup and they hit a major home run. But for the most part, I think you have to go through a challenge. And then I think in some cases too, where you have that major home run, you didn't go through challenge, it might not be as easy to hold on to that money either once you get it, because you haven't gone through that challenge and you think it's really easy to achieve over and over again. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So what are the brands that you're looking at in terms of revenue standpoint? You mentioned 5 million, like at which point would you consider a brand, and like between kind of what ranges as far as who you're considering to work with?
Yeah. Before I share that, I just want to call out really just very on point points there. I think that when you look at a lot of the aggregators and what their sort of demeanor was when we were just at Prosper in a few months ago to what it was the year before, and definitely the year before that, where we had companies spending $1,000 per head on events for 1,000 person parties versus today, very different. And
Yoni, we enjoyed those times.
Don't get me wrong. I wish every aggregator succeeds. And right. I would love that were the times that we're all in here. But to your point, it's very interesting to see that shift of the landscape. Also, like a lot of people who had an 8x multiple on a $500,000 EBITDA right. business and being like, this is so easy, I'm just going to roll it again. And now you have compression on both sides, both from supply chain and logistics and Amazon coming at you. A much higher degree of competition, ad spend is going, you really need to be a much more sophisticated operator today than you ever have had to be. And you would experience this just being an agency and living and breathing what needs to be done today versus what it was like 2 years ago and 3 years ago and 4 years ago. It's really evolved. I think we're moving into a really interesting age of just the professionalization of the space. And the next few years are going to be very telling as to where we're headed and what it looks like. So it's just a super interesting landscape. And I think your observation was really spot on. Coming back to your question though, we are looking at brands, I would say our starting points at about $4 million in revenue and, you know, 20% operating margins is the goal here. That's the starting point. We've invested in companies that are, you know, in the eight figures, sort of 20 million plus range. We've invested in companies closer to the range that I just shared. And really what we're looking for, we're not at the moment a turnaround company. We're not coming in here and looking at a business in decline and saying, you know, we can fix this and let's go. What we're saying is you've hit a winning brand. You really have belief and vision in where you want to take it. You're committed to exit in 2 years time from now. And you're in a category that we know that we can sell if it's like supplements or something that's going to be very low margins or things that are going to be more challenging than where, like I was saying, we're looking to back winners and we're really just looking to add fuel to a founder and help build clarity and traction on where they're going to be 2 years on and how to build that working backward roadmap sort of 2 years out and guiding them to that. So I would say even if you sit a little below those numbers, like we're always here to have a conversation. And I would say as a starting point, we're here to help. Like we've just rolled out a valuation calculator on our website that people can put in a bunch of information about their business and they can get it spat back, showing them what their current market valuation might look like. We brought on Adam Rundquist, Adam Heist, as a advisor to South Cole. And we're going to be coming out regularly on his channel, sharing with people like, how do we build our roadmap? What does that experience look like? We're trying to share everything. And, you know, as we start to release more information about the brands that we've invested in, we're actually going to be very public with at least one of them for sure. Like the first investment that we made, she's very open to being in the limelight and having those conversations. So really documenting the journey and sharing the things that have been done in the hopes that whether people work with us or not, they're learning and they can really have an impact on their professional and business development.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's good to have
people in the space that are willing to share and are not just looking to take. I think I've seen both in this space, so it's really nice. Yeah, I had a talking about a little bit of aggregators and learning some of the lessons. I had a company reach out to me today. I'm not going to say the name, but it's a e-com acquirer in stealth mode. And the email was that they are cooking up an ingenious strategy that could skyrocket Amazon seller success by a mind-boggling 15 to 25x. And I'm a little bit like, haven't you learned just, anything from the last...
For just 15 easy payments.
Yeah. And I have no idea. I told you before we got on, they emailed me like an NDA. And if I want to get on a call, I have no idea what they really want. But funny part is, don't make a prove it, do it with a couple of brands and then talk about it. And I think this also was the maybe mistake or the, let's say, I can say to some extent, again, I wouldn't say individual people, but the arrogance in general in the aggregator space was like, founder, you're out in 30 days. We don't really need you. We could do this better type thing. None of us here in the company have ever operated a brand before, but we're bringing a guy from who ran Procter & Gamble, and we think that's the same as the grind of selling on Amazon. And I think the general kind of philosophy was, if these small sellers could do it, imagine what these MBAs could do, right? And not understanding that Amazon is about grit and grinding and fighting Amazon and consistently learning, and things are changing. And I think there was a certain level of arrogance there that was learned the hard way in some sense. Also a very challenging time, obviously, with pandemic and the boost that everyone had and trying to figure out what valuations were based on crazy sales. So there were for sure challenges there too, but you would think that new companies coming into the space would learn a little bit from that. But
you can look, and I have a lot of respect for Thrasio, literally invented, they didn't invent the aggregation model, but they were the ones that brought the Amazon FBA aggregation model to reality. And if you look at their journey, fastest profitable unicorn in global history. It took them less than 18 months.
Right.
They went on to raise a total of $3.4 billion, acquiring north of 260 companies, and ultimately ended up burning cash, letting go of between 10 and 20% of their 2,000 person workforce, and have gone through obviously multiple restructures. And the lesson in all of this is, I believe, let me also finish off, I believe they'll get it right and they'll turn the company to where it needs to be. And anyone who grows that quickly, it's just so hard. It's so hard to grow from 4 people to 2,000 in 3 years. It's wild. Things are going to break, but you're switching out these Wharton and Princeton MBAs for people that when you're to W-2 employees who, at the end of the day, if your account's kicked off on a Saturday night, I'll wait and deal with it on Monday when I roll into work. Like, I'm on my weekend. If that happens to you, I've got horror stories. When I was in that Amazon business, it was 4 a.m. We get a call. It's December 17, where we do 80% of our revenue in that next 2-week period and the build up to Christmas. I'm on phone calls to seller support. We're closing down. You guys have done some black hat shit. And I'm writing my POA as if the business literally depended on it.
Right.
End up getting that account live in 4 hours, which I've still never heard anyone have a quicker turnaround time to this day. We did $1 million over the course of the next 10 days. That was all of the profit for the entire year. I'm saying you're not getting that from an experience where someone doesn't have their life on the line and they're paying themselves a shitty wage. And it's all about the pipe dream of what they're going to get to. Yeah. Anyway, to your point, I'm getting carried away here, but that's the reality. That is the value of a brand owner, a founder, and their commitment and dedication and love for the grit of what it is to build a brand.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we go, Yoni, can you share one example of something where you've come in and were able to see something, make a change, and you think that's going to massively impact one of the businesses you're working with right now?
Yeah. I'll give you the first example that springs to mind is that it was a $4 million $4 million US-based and a partial Australia-based Amazon business. We've worked to get it live in the UK and EU, which is now already starting to have a material difference on the bottom line. But what's more is like that brand development. When we look to take it likely to a strategic or a PE firm, all of a sudden, now there's a whole brand story around it that is far deeper. There's more characters that are coming to market. There's YouTube short series that are being built right now. And so all of a sudden, it's gone from a really great brand with an incredible founder and an incredible mission sat behind her. It's turned into something that is so much bigger than what it was. And so when we now start these whisper campaigns where, you know, the year out before the business goes to market, we'll look to take it to market early next year, we already know who the targets are. They understand where it needs to be and what it needs to look like. And we're also building that D2C shop right now as well. So those are just in the one brand. That's just a few examples of what we've done. Another example has been a total shift in the way in which they're handling their supply chain and 3PL relationships. We're totally shifting it from what was actually a fully in-house operation to now working with professional outsourced providers, because even though on the surface that actually feels like it could be more expensive, we've been able to, with our relationships, find meaningful ways that actually reduces the burden and the operating costs around what is a pretty complicated supply chain situation here. And again, we've going to reduce the operating costs quite significantly and also the operational burden inside of it. I think one of the things that we realized too, and the thing that South Coal is not, is compared to what we would do in a typical Escala project, is we're not trying to necessarily build every single team member in-house and grow this business for the next 10 years and build that heavy infrastructure. If we can find high value external resources, then that makes a lot more sense, especially when it's for a short period of time. There's only so many things that you can do in a 2-year period.
Also good when you want to exit, those pieces are for sure kind of staying on and still there if they're external. So that's also a positive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the way we're documenting it all also enables them to make good decisions as to, I now understand the operation. Do I bring it in-house? Is that one of the value adds that a potential acquirer can, we were talking a little bit about the nature of larger D2C brands and bringing in an Amazon component or vice versa, if they have those capabilities, how valuable it is all of a sudden to be able to roll in a house of brands that's pure D2C into, let's say, an Amazon agency, having those capabilities all of a sudden. I know one of your targets would literally be like, how do we just find D2C brands and then help them get onto Amazon? And that's such an easy lever and an easy proof of concept for them to get into another channel without them really having to do anything, because Incrementum will handle it. I'm getting off track here again, but I get excited.
Yeah, that's awesome. How do people get in touch with South Coal or follow what you're doing? I know you mentioned you have your own podcast, so tell us how they can find everything.
Yeah, so southcoal.co is the South Coal website. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. That's my channel, just Yoni Kosminski. I've got the Successful Scales podcast, which at the moment I'm actually not producing. I've taken a little bit of a break, but probably through summer, I'll really start to get back into that production mindset. But yeah, I would say that's going to be my best channels. And obviously, we are Escala.com, multiplyme.com. Those are the businesses that I'm involved in.
Amazing. Great. Thank you so much for taking the time. And I'm sure I'll see you soon at some, actually, I'll be in Israel in June. So I'm sure I'll see you
at that event. Absolutely. Right. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Same here. June 19th, an event run by Fortunate and I think Scale for Etail. So look out for that and we'll see you there.
That's correct. Yael and Michal putting on the heat.
Yes.
In the middle of summer here.
Yes, exactly.
It'll be great. Thank you.